You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we are welcoming slash preparing to learn from Mark Azulay, psychotherapist, organizational developer, entrepreneur, and best of all, a goddamn hype machine. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Happy to be here.
That's awesome. I'm so glad to have you on the show. Mark, you got a lot going on. Let's just get the gist of what you do just really quick so that the listeners can say, what am I about to hear? So what do you do?
Yeah, I do a bunch of things. The main bread and butter is I'm a psychotherapist and organizational consultant for startup CEOs. So I work with teams. I work with leaders. I'm dealing with the emotional struggles of being a business owner.
Sure.
And working with, you know, some of their early childhood experiences, working with traumas they may have experienced. Because, you know, I'm sure you or people that you've heard, people that are listening, have had a bad boss, you know, or
right.
bad
employees.
You know, people that have acted out.
Right,
bad employees,
right.
You know? And a lot of times that comes from, or most of the time actually, it comes from early experiences. It's actually not about the current situation. It's often a person being triggered by an early childhood experience that then gets enacted in the workplace.
You know,
so my job is to work with these people.
That's awesome. You just justify me asking people, as a side, who hurt you? Like you're kind of lashing out here. Mm-hmm. Just what happened? Because this is a lot of times people will either react or overreact to a given situation. So I definitely hear what you're talking about. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's very true, right? And you know, people often make a lot of assumptions about others. So say somebody has had, you know, an issue with their mother, for instance. If there's an employee or a boss that reminds them of their mother, they're going to start acting in those old regressed ways, and they're going to start really harming the business and harming the mission.
Right.
Because they're stuck in their own stuff.
Sure. Employees with baggage, or even leaders with baggage, right? Business owners with baggage. That's got to be, I guess in the end, they're all people. So all people come with baggage.
Yeah, people come with tons of baggage. And, you know, maybe you get like a little bit political. I think in the current political climate, leaders and business owners are kind of given a bad rap. They're seen as like, you know, greedy or selfish or corrupt. I mean, it's kind of a strange thing. Instead of being celebrated, they're often being demonized.
Right.
So many of the leaders that I work with are dealing with that type of cultural messaging. And
yeah.
It's hard for them because, especially for startup people that, you know, a lot of times they're engineers, they're nerds, they're researchers, they're new to business, and all of a sudden they're getting hit with all these stereotypes and all these
right.
Negative thoughts about themselves.
I joke about that, right? Like when you start a business, people assume a few things, right? One is that you're instantly rich, and two is that you're a jerk. Just right off the bat.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
And people are like, no, I started a business, I'm totally broke, and I like to think I'm a nice person, but I'm having to thicken up my skin a little bit. Because you got to take a lot of crap when you're a business owner, when you're an entrepreneur.
There's a lot of crap, and it's a lot of power and a lot of responsibility that's often out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair. So really quick, if you don't mind, and this is just for me educationally, I'm probably not that bright. A psychotherapist, which you are, versus a psychologist versus a shrink, let's say, or versus a psychoanalyst, I guess. Can you break it down specifically? What is the difference there?
Yeah. So I'm technically a psychoanalyst.
Okay.
But I'm happy that you know that word. Most people don't know that word. So what the difference is that as an analyst, what I do is I don't prescribe medication. So that's what, you know, a psychiatrist would do.
Gotcha.
I don't do neurological testing or, you know, intense diagnosis. That's what a psychologist would do.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do is I do kind of a talking cure. So a shrink, right? I help people to free associate, which means saying whatever comes to their mind without censoring.
Sure.
And the idea behind that is to kind of uncover the unconscious processes that people have.
Gotcha. All right. I like this. I like this.
Right.
This is very cool. So I would argue, I guess, that most of the time drugs aren't needed, but I argue that from a position of never having to need drugs in that regard. So, I mean, maybe I'm crazy biased there, but I like to think that people in their subconscious mind can discover consciously ways to fix things. So I like what you got going on here. That's cool.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think drugs are needed for a percentage of the population, but it's not the solution. It's a way to do the deeper work and to create the lifestyle change required.
Sure. Okay,
so
that's fair.
It can be helpful to stabilize somebody, but it's not the answer.
Sure. Now, let's take a step to the organizational developer portion of your title here. What is that?
Yeah, so I work with, I mean, similar. It's just instead of working with the leader, I work with the whole team.
Okay, the whole organization, so to speak. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Mainly, like I was saying, startup tech companies or nonprofits. Boulder, Colorado, where I'm from, has quite a big scene for both those things.
Oh, sure.
So I go in, and I'm trained in group psychotherapy, so I do group techniques that helps organizations get better, essentially.
And interesting, kind of okay.
The underlying drama, you know, talk about the, you know, projections I was talking about before, work through a lot of problems, help them to facilitate conversations that create a better working atmosphere.
Sure.
So we do that kind of process work, that relational work, coupled with more concrete things, you know, such as creating bylaws or creating policies or creating, structuring meetings, things like that. Because again, you know, a lot of these startups and nonprofits is people that have, you know, incredible amounts of intelligence.
Sure.
That have wonderful technologies, great ideas, their heart is often in the right place, but they don't have any of the business skills required. Because
sure.
They're either trained as scientists or engineers or they're humanitarians, but nobody ever taught them how to actually run a company.
Right.
Right. So that's my job.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay.
Do the business part.
So that sounds like that's not exactly a one-shot, one-kill kind of thing. Like, there must be some repetition to that. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, typically I work... So with the analyst, I work ongoing with people.
Okay.
You know, typically the leaders, we do ongoing treatment weekly. Goes on for sometimes years. I mean, I have some clients that I've worked with for over 5 years now.
Wow.
With
okay.
The organization development thing, oftentimes, and I wish that the culture would be different, but oftentimes I'm brought in when a crisis is happening.
Yeah.
You know, when everything's
you
going
get to be
on.
The ambulance, right? When do you need a stop sign?
What's really common is when a venture capital gets involved. So you have, you know, say you have a group of three friends in college that are programmers and they develop an app, and they've been kind of working in their garage or whatever, kind of typical story, and then they get an investor. And all of a sudden, there's $3 million on the table.
Sure. And they want to make sure everyone's going to get along and no one's going to walk away crying, right?
Right. And that's the thing, because it gets nasty fast.
Sure.
It's a similar, it's an unfortunate human thing, but many people have experienced it. Again, unfortunately, when, you know, a grandparent dies,
sure,
the family is, like, not that close, but now there's a bunch of money on the table and people get really nasty and they fight over it. And it gets really, it can oftentimes tear families apart.
Sure.
So the same thing can happen in the startup scene, where all of a sudden there's a bunch of money on the table. A lot of these people don't know how to spend it. They sometimes buy a bunch of drugs. They go party. They travel. There's sometimes they get very jealous. All of a sudden, all the resentments come out of, like, I work harder than you. You work harder than me. You know, I put in the blood, sweat, tears. Oh, this is really my idea. And that is when I like to intervene, because at that moment, that's when it gets real.
Okay, sure. Interesting. That's pretty cool. Probably a little scary sometimes, but
But I've done enough of them that I can help to navigate the people through it.
Okay. So how long have you been doing this?
I've been doing, well, that specific type of work for just about 3 or 4 years now.
Okay.
And I work with no more than 3 or 4 corporate clients or startup clients at the same time, because it's pretty labor intensive.
Sure.
And I really want to make sure that they get my full attention.
Okay. That makes sense. How do they find you? Like, if I have a corporation and I got people that are just messed up to the point of me believing that I need some help, like from a person like you, how do I find you? Do I just Google fixing crazy people, or what do I guess help me out here?
Crazy people. Well, I think I'm pretty lucky in Boulder, because there's a pretty big startup scene here. We have a Boulder Startup Week that is every year. And we have a bunch of startup events. So I'm just fairly well known in that scene. I go to the events. It's kind of word of mouth.
Sure.
Right now,
okay.
You know, we have a fair number of startup incubators in town, so I go and network with them.
Oh, nice!
So I've kind of built up a reputation for that. I'm not sure where you might be. You might find somebody. I think Googling organizational developer. There is a agency or a organization I'm part of called the OD Network, which stands for Organizational Development Network, and they have a directory.
All right.
So.
All right.
That could be a resource.
Nice. Yeah. I like it. So are you, the majority of the clients that you work with, are they local then? Local to you?
Almost exclusively. So the companies I work with are all local, because I like going into their offices or their place of work and doing the group work, and it's way more powerful in person.
Gotcha.
I do work with a few people, executive coaching in California, you know, in Silicon Valley, essentially.
Sure.
But that's more one-on-one work.
Gotcha. Okay. And then let's roll through here, right? What is the, tell me about the hype machine. Because that's magical.
Hype machine, I just like screaming.
Nice.
I really like presenting. I have a very, powerful, bubbly, bouncy personality.
Sure.
And I like boosting people up.
All right.
Similar to kind of what we were talking about before of leaders not really knowing what they're getting into.
Sure.
And often being hit with a lot of stress and a lot of like lonely stress, because many people don't talk about that side of entrepreneurship. Like, I'm very happy that a podcast like yours exists, or a show like yours exists, because we don't talk about the failures as much. We don't talk about the loneliness, the hardship, right?
Right.
The envy of our community, the judgment of our friends and family. I mean, it's a whole issue.
Yeah. You look at what any of the greats, we'll call them for lack of a better word, right? The Jeff Bezos of the world, or the Bill Gates and stuff like that. And people just assume that, oh my gosh, they're ultra rich and successful. Like, do you know what it took for them to get there? Like, they had to trudge through a lot of stuff and tolerate a lot of stuff and see things through a lot of trash that even if you would know, even if any normal person would say, like, oh, I bet this is going to be big, would you really have the stamina to dig into that for the next 10 or 20 years, knowing that maybe you'll be successful, but there's no guarantee?
Yeah. I just feel like a
huge
battle.
Yeah. We reward success and just assume that it's a light switch. And then I guess we as entrepreneurs, or just people in general looking for success of any kind, right? Expect everyone to be great or be able to be great at the flick of a switch, right? Just the desire alone. I got a 5-year-old kid that I'm having to teach that. We're just a side tangent, right? He was watching some video on YouTube of these guys doing crazy trick shots and all this kind of stuff, right? So he's like, oh, we should try that. And I'm like, all right. And I set up this crazy trick shot that we could try. And he tries it once, and of course he doesn't make it. And he's like, what are we supposed to do now? And I'm like, well, we try again. It's probably going to take us 1,000 times to make that shot. They don't show all the failures, because that'd be a boring video.
That's right.
So convincing him that it wasn't just magical just because of desire alone, that took a little bit of work. And I imagine some people it took me a little while to realize that you just don't mature beyond that to a point.
Yeah, well, and I mean, similar to what you're saying, a lot of those failures happen in isolation.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. People are alone in their office doing their thing, or they don't want to show, they don't want to meet anybody or talk to anyone because they're afraid to answer the question, how's business?
Right.
Sure. Very common, I bet.
And they don't have any support, and people often don't share. I think it's getting better now, but typically people don't really share the failures or share the stories.
Sure.
So what happens is that, you know, you get that, you know, crushing email that just invalidates, 8 months of work or whatever.
Oopsie.
And the hard part is that nobody will ever understand it to the same level that you will.
Sure.
Because
they
weren't there for the whole process. They don't know what it's like. They don't know what goes into it. And a lot of those experiences, if they're not supported, you know, by someone like me or a business partner or a friend, whatever, can lead to a really high anxiety or even depressive state in a lot of these people.
Sure.
Because it really is a solo road in a lot of ways.
Right. Right. That's fair. Totally fair. Yeah. You got chief cook and bottle washer, right? And the buck stops with you, all that jazz. So you just got to do it.
Well, and there's nowhere to hide. That's my favorite part. So I also work, when I work with startups, I also work with startup therapists, the people that are moving into private practice. And for me, in my story, that was really great because I used to really hate bosses. Many employees where I would blame them for all the stuff. And, you know, I'd be like, oh, it's because, you know, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so is, you know, on me or whatever.
Sure.
But once you're a solo entrepreneur and you own your own company, every single thing is me.
Right. You can't blame the boss anymore.
I have no one to blame. So I had to really grow, and I think I did really grow significantly in who I was as a person because I couldn't hide from myself.
Yeah, I don't know.
I couldn't shift the blame.
Right. It's interesting you say that because I never really got into the whole self-help thing too much. I mean, a little bit, just when it was kind of hip and stuff like that before I started my business. But once I got it rolling, I can't get enough of it. I'm just drinking that Kool-Aid all day long, trying to improve as a person, as a business person, as a salesperson, blah, 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 all that jazz. So that's interesting. It was almost a forced competence that you want to, you know, p- pay attention in class like you should have years ago, I suppose.
Yeah, because all of a sudden everything is personal.
Yeah.
And it's true, I think, for men in general. My practice is mainly men. It's like about 75% men.
Oh, interesting.
And a lot
okay.
of men can diagnose business problems.
Sure.
Right? We're more comfortable talking about business problems than our own personal problems because we weren't really educated in how to do that in the same way that women are.
Just sweep that stuff under a rug where it belongs, right?
Right. Power through, you know, like pull up your bootstraps. Like,
sure.
You know, be tough.
Mm-hmm.
But we can diagnose business problems all day. You know, it's often a big revelation for some of the people who I work with when, again, and they're solo entrepreneurs, it's like, hey, that business problem you have, that problem you have of following up with leads, that problem probably exists in your life with your wife.
Sure.
You probably struggle following up with her.
Sure.
You know, or you struggle showing up for your kids. Or you struggle when your kids experience anger, you don't know what to do with it.
Right.
So there's often, not often, there is 100% parallel because you are your business.
Right.
But it's easier, I think, for men to enter in through the business side.
Oh, absolutely.
So I think it's
That's
a phenomenal
fair.
Way to get into self-help and to get into self-awareness.
Sure. Sure. I like that.
Plus,
that's totally true.
Financial payoff. So that helps.
Say that one. Oh, it's very measurable, right? That success is very measurable because you can look at tangible dollar amounts.
Mm-hmm.
There's no like, I feel better. I guess there is a little bit. But in the end, people ask, how's business? You can say, well, I feel great. Do you have any money to prove
exactly.
it? Yeah, so that's very cool. Very cool. The phrase you use, startup therapist, I thought you were going a totally different direction, so that's why I kind of giggled a little bit there. Because I thought, oh my gosh, that's a phenomenal business idea, right? Is to be a therapist for startups. But I guess the challenge that I see, and I imagine you do as well, is that some startups, people, entrepreneurs, new entrepreneurs may believe that they know everything. They don't necessarily know or believe that they need therapy. And after a year, they probably realize they're totally wrong, but...
Well, a lot of them don't. I mean, I wish... I mean, that's essentially what I do. I'm essentially a startup therapist.
Yeah.
But a lot of them... Like I said, it unfortunately takes the crisis. And I think that's human nature, is that we need to hit some kind of rock bottom. I mean, I'm personally in recovery. I've been sober for eight years. And before I did this type of work, I did addictions work.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's a very similar thing.
Sure.
Is that people's lives needed to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
Bad. You know, we're talking like divorces, we're talking, you know, losing kids, we're talking, unfortunately, overdoses.
Sure.
You know, suicidality, you know, bankruptcy, for people to make some of those major changes. And I believe it's the same thing with any kind of self-help is, you know, if the system is working good enough,
mm-hmm.
people tend to just kind of cruise.
Sure.
I think it takes a certain type of person, and it sounds like you might be one of those type of people that want to continue to do better, that want to continue to optimize.
Yeah, there's no limit.
It takes, like, kind of an Empire Strikes Back moment, you know?
Right.
It takes like a moment of darkness before we start investing in ourselves in a major way.
So you got it. This is just something that I came up with. I'm listening to you talk and I'm thinking, okay, if I was a guy that was helping people through addictions and learning about some very personal, powerful problems that are real challenges for people. And then some business owner came to me and said, you know what? I'm not making sales. I think I'd want to reach over and punch him in the neck. Cause like, that's not a real problem. You can solve that problem. There's got other people with overdoses or family issues or losing a kid, divorce, all that jazz. Some of those I would consider to be a larger problem in the whole human societal scale of that individual rather than their little business problems. How do you get over that? I guess that, and maybe this is just me, right? When somebody would come to me with a small problem after dealing with much larger, in my perspective, much larger problems, saying like, dude, you really don't have a problem.
I think that's a really legitimate question, and let me see if I can answer it. Because I think the answer I'm going to give is maybe a little bit taboo, but I think it's real.
Sure,
so,
sure. As long as it's real, we're good.
Yeah, as long as it's real. I mean, I've put a lot of thought into that question, actually. You know, and I think, unfortunately, a lot of the people with the big problems, like you talk about, don't get better. And
sure.
That's a hard truth. I think a lot of that has to deal with our culture not really supporting it. I think a lot of it has to do with lack of resources. I think a lot of it has to do with a broken insurance system. Unfortunately, in the mental health world, the people that need the highest level of treatment, you know, people that have serious addictions or serious mental health issues, don't have access to high levels of treatment.
Sure.
Typically, the community mental health places either, you know, hire new grads, or the people that have stuck around tend to be burnt out or, frankly, just not very skilled. So they're not accessing good levels of treatment.
Sure. Okay.
Therapy is still a luxury good. And I wish it was different, but it tends to be, you know, if you can afford it, you can get better treatment, because we as providers need to kind of make a living too.
Like an
entry level community health physician, when I was working, I worked at a Department of Corrections, but I worked in the jail system. And I was getting paid $35,000 a year. And that was, you know,
in Colorado?
In Boulder, Colorado.
Hey.
Which is way below.
You had the sweetest cardboard box to live in, right?
Dude, like I had to eat beans and rice. I was vegetarian because I could not afford meat.
Wow. Okay.
Right? Like I literally couldn't afford meat. I was eating beans and rice every day. It was crazy. You know.
All right.
I got into hiking because it's free.
I really like to walk. Do you have any hobbies? Walking. I just walk.
Yeah. Walking outside. You know?
We call it hiking because it sounds fancier, but in the end, you're just going for a walk. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Exactly.
Ouch. Okay. So I see what you're saying there.
That's kind of unfortunate. And many of those people, it's more about stabilizing them. It's more about taking them from, and again, I kind of hate the hierarchy, but I think it's a simple way to explain it. Taking people from like the bottom 20% and bringing them up to 50%.
Sure.
So that they live a standard life, right? They have an okay job. They're not hurting people. They're not reoffending. They're not killing themselves. But their lives are just pretty stable.
Well, they're also contributing, right?
Now, Yeah. They're contributing, and I mean, main thing is that they're just not hurting other people.
Sure, they're no longer a drain. They're contributing something.
Right.
Maybe it's not solving world hunger, but they can feed themselves, kind of thing.
Yeah, they can feed themselves. You know, oftentimes they can invest in their family.
Sure.
You know, but they're not out there using. They're not, you know, domestic violence offending.
Sure.
Stuff like that.
Sure.
The work that I'm doing now is kind of taking the top 75, so people that already are fairly high functioning, and trying to bring them to 100 or maybe even like 120
of them. Oh, okay. All right. I got light bulbs going off. I like this. Okay.
Yeah. And I do believe, and this is maybe a more conservative thought, but I believe it, of it does trickle down, right?
Sure.
If somebody has a lot of, you know, privilege, has a lot of power, has a lot of impact, and it's coming from a real place of, you know, resonance and coherence and, you know, not purity is maybe not a good word, but just kind of cleanliness, in that they're not acting from their old patterns, they're not acting from their old traumas.
Sure.
Then they can really change the world in a meaningful way.
Sure.
And the people that I work with, you know, startup entrepreneurs and nonprofits, I select the companies that I believe in the mission of.
Okay.
You know? So without disclosing too much, because there's confidentiality, I work with a drug discovery cancer research company.
Okay.
And I'm very invested in keeping their leadership team as strong as possible, because if they can succeed, you know, like, I don't know the science, I just know the dynamics, group dynamics, but if I can help them with that, they can do the science, and then they can help work and cure cancer.
Sure.
You know, and that will have much greater, in my mind, much greater social impact, you know, than helping somebody not go to jail again.
All right. I like where you're taking that. So it's more of a group rather than individual. Once the dust settles and success has been made.
Yeah, and you know, to try to create these exemplars, or try to create these forces for good in the world that have the ability to make lasting, impactful change.
Sure. I like that. Okay, that's fair. Super cool. So you started your own business. You started your own practice here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what made you decide to go off on your own versus just working for someone else, the man or the woman, so to speak?
the system.
Yeah.
Mainly, like I was saying before, just how broken the system is in a lot of ways. It doesn't support the lifestyle that I wanted. It didn't support self-growth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it didn't give me access to the training that I wanted, access to the people that I needed.
Sure.
It was like I hit a glass ceiling very, very early.
Really? Okay.
And I was like, I would prefer to create my own business and my own job.
Okay.
And in the beginning, I created a job for myself, which is like really hard. And now I'm creating a business, something that is more than just a job, more than just kind of a place to, you know, hang my hat.
To a point where you'll have employees, or you have other residual income coming in, so the business doesn't rely on you as much, or how so?
Yeah, I have a little bit of passive income streams right now. I'm actually in the process of, I also run a nonprofit.
Oh,
okay. I'm in the process of leaving that nonprofit. My president term is up.
Okay.
And next year I'm looking at a crossroads of either doing what you said, of hiring more people, creating a group, or kind of what I'm doing now is, or be more of a nationally recognized speaker, do more kind of online courses, more, paid speaking arrangements. I'm not sure what direction to go in.
All right.
But that's the next crossroads that I'm looking at.
Interesting. Well, sounds like one lets you stay home and the one hits you on the road.
Exactly.
On the flip side, one, you have to don't have to deal with employees, which there's something to be said for that. Don't let my employees know that.
They don't listen to this.
They totally know because I tell them every time they're a pain. Because I'm authentically honest with them as well, probably to a fault. Anyway, so yeah, it sounds like two very different roads, but would lead to the same in the end. You're improving, so that's cool. So I guess going back to the whole startup therapist, what have you learned since you started your business?
About business or about psychology or?
Let's say that's fair. Let's say about business specifically, because you're good at the psychotherapist, psychoanalyst stuff, but then you got to learn paperwork and all that jazz, selling, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
So I guess what are some of the things that you have learned that maybe at the time when you first started your business, you didn't realize that you didn't know?
Yes. The number one biggest thing that I learned was personal organization and beating procrastination.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if you've heard of David Allen and the Getting Things Done system. It's popular in some business circles.
No, I can't say that I have. But I will check it out.
But it's great. It's great. It's just, he writes a book and it's fantastic.
Okay.
But it's a way to organize, capture everything, write down everything, taking notes, creating business plans. I didn't do that. I used to be a huge procrastinator.
Okay.
And the biggest thing I learned, and I think has really benefited me as a solo entrepreneur, is just doing things immediately.
Mm.
Being the first one, being the one that always follows up, being the one that responds to the email immediately. And sometimes that causes a lot of stress, like I was just gone on vacation for 2 weeks before this phone call.
Nice.
This is the longest vacation I've taken in like 5 years.
Very cool.
It was, and it was stressful. It was stressful to see those emails come in and not to be able to respond to them.
All right.
But by and large, when I'm in my element, when I'm working, mm-hmm. I can respond very quickly. And I had to get over a lot of procrastination. I had to look at where that came from. For me, procrastination was highly linked with self-sabotage.
Mm,
and anxiety and, missing the important shots. I would respond. I noticed a pattern where I would respond to all the kind of, mediocre or kind of inconsequential leads, but the most important ones, I procrastinate.
Really? And okay.
At the beginning of my life as a business owner, I would procrastinate those to the point of failure, to the point of, I would get back to them 2 weeks later and they're like, oh, yeah, we already
found
somebody for this, I lose the opportunity.
Sure.
And a lot of that for me was, rooted in self-sabotage, lack of self-esteem, feeling like an imposter, all these deeper things that were being enacted through the email situation.
Sure. How did you realize that this was happening?
I worked with a therapist.
Oh.
I did the work that I'm doing now.
Sure. Okay. Did you work with an external therapist, or was this you reading your textbook saying, like, wait a second, that's me?
Oh, with an external therapist. So I'm still in treatment. I've been in treatment for 10 years.
Okay.
I believe that every therapist or every coach, for that matter, should be in therapy or coaching.
Sure.
Because, if we don't do it, what are we talking about?
I don't believe it's good. Sure.
Yeah.
Have you been with
I have a therapist and we worked with it and figured that out.
The same therapist for a decade?
No, I've worked with three.
Okay.
Overall. So I had one in college. I had one when I first moved here. And then I have one now that is actually in Chicago.
Oh, nice.
He specializes in business development and does similar to what I do. And the other ones before were more addictions counselors. So when I was getting sober, it was helpful for me to work with someone that specializes in addiction.
Gotcha. Okay. So how did you find this therapist, the most recent one in Chicago?
The most recent one, so I'm part of a national organization called the AGPA, which stands for the American Group Psychological Association.
All right.
And I go to their conference every year, and I took a workshop from him that was actually on some of the stuff I've been talking to you about, that's on power, competition, jealousy as a business owner. And he was teaching it.
Oh, nice.
And I was just blown away. I was just blown away by what he was saying. I was blown away by the way that he taught it, his charisma, the activities that he did with with the participants, the work that I saw happen. It was like a full 2-day workshop.
Sure.
And afterwards, I was like, I got to hire you.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So that's that.
So you can give these workshops all over the place and people can do that same thing then eventually, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the idea, I imagine, to a point.
yeah, that's one of those vectors, right? It's
sure.
Like either be that guy, and do that, or open the group practice and become more of a traditional business owner.
Sure.
More of a, you know, employer.
So let's go back a few years. Now, you've had your business for 5 years, is that right?
Yeah, in the current form, we can say about 5 years.
Okay. Is there different forms or longer times or?
Well, I've always kind of been an entrepreneur. I've always had either side hustles or gigs or you know, online businesses. But yeah, for this psychotherapy business, 5 years.
Gotcha. Okay. We're not going to count Amway or anything like that, but
right.
I get what you're saying. How, I guess, when did you decide to go down the road of, we'll call it, helping people through psychology?
Yeah, well, that was before. I mean, that was a big part of my recovery process and my sobriety process.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a drug addict in mm-hmm. college,
mm-hmm.
and I got sober, and I went through AA.
Okay.
And the 12th step in AA is about giving back. It's about being of service and helping people in a similar situation.
Sure.
So it was a combination of really trying to live that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, more cynically, because my experience was pretty much doing a bunch of drugs, I was like, well, I know about this.
Sure.
You know, here's some expertise that I can bring.
I got two sides of that coin.
My same situation.
Sure. Yeah. All right. That makes sense.
And therapy really worked for me. And I'm the kind of person that I will only participate in an industry or sell something that I know works.
Okay.
I don't want to be a salesperson for something that I don't believe in.
Sure,
so
that's fair.
Someone who has had, you know, 10 years of client experience, I know that it works.
Sure.
You know, I'm an example of that. So I feel very comfortable integrating that into my life.
All right. So let me ask you the question here. You said you were addicted to drugs in college. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So what were you going to college for?
So originally I was going to college for computer science because I was a huge nerd. And in the first semester, I both got dumped from my girlfriend at the time, my first girlfriend ever, so it broke my little baby heart. And also the computer science curriculum wasn't socially helpful because a lot of times it was being alone in the lab, you know, literally underground, isolated, staring at a computer screen. And that was the last thing I needed after leaving my home and after, you know, dealing with the breakup. And I got really depressed, and I got suicidal, and I turned to drugs after that. You know, as a high schooler, I was actually very straight-laced. I was 100% straight-laced. But it wasn't until I really had that heartbreak and that pain that I started doing a bunch of drugs.
Interesting. Okay. So in the computer
science...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying, so, you know, did computer science, essentially failed out of that, because I was just hurt and started doing drugs for the first time. So I failed out of that. I was interested in psychology. So I talked to my advisor. I said, hey, I want to switch to psychology. I went to Carnegie Mellon University, which is like a very science and tech school.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, hey, since you already have these computer science credits, how about you do neuroscience? Because there's quite a bit of overlap, so you don't have to do an extra year.
Really?
Because as part of the neuroscience degree, you have to take basic computer science at CMU.
Okay.
Yeah. So I switched and I did neuroscience. So that's what my undergrad was.
Well, very cool. So you got to tell me, I mean, I'm going to go down the road a little bit, and you can tell me you don't want to go down this road, but when your girlfriend breaks up with you and you go down the drug road, how did you first get into the drugs? Were you just like, you know what, that crazy girl, she dumped me, I'm going to go find some drugs? Or did somebody knock on your door and just with very good timing from a salesperson's point of view?
No, well, so it's actually a funny story. And by the way, you can ask me any question you want. I'm a total book.
All right.
It's a funny story. So the first thing I do, because I was actually suicidal,
okay.
You know, at that time after that heartbreak. So I went to therapy, right? Because I was like, okay, I should go seek a mental health counselor. And I hadn't done drugs at the time. Went to therapy. And the very first therapist, she gave me a bunch of worksheets. Just like a bunch. She was like very, she did something called CBT, which I think is great now. But at the time, I didn't need worksheets. I didn't need homework. I just needed someone to listen to me.
What is CBT?
You know? CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy.
Okay.
So it's a very evidence-based, highly researched, standardized form of treatment that uses, you know, worksheets, essentially. And
everybody's favorite, right? Are there any story problems?
Everyone's favorite, yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm like 17 years old, my heart is broken, and this person is like, here, do some homework.
And wow. I'm going to get right on that.
I did maybe 3 or 4 sessions, and I was like, this is garbage. You know, this is not helping me.
Sure.
I quit, you know, so I I quit. I was back to being depressed. And then one of my friends, and I don't blame him for this, one of my friends came in and was like, hey, you know, do you want to like smoke weed and talk about your problems?
Sure.
You know? And that's like in college, it's like a common thing. So I started smoking weed. It was the first time I ever smoked. And we talked about our problems. And that was actually very intimate and very healing for me. And
no worksheets involved, right?
Yeah, no worksheets involved. Just like two people just sure. talking. And I, you know, cried and helped. And that over time, that became a habit of I would smoke with his friend and smoke with his friends and started doing that. And, you know, marijuana is a gateway drug to other things. And sure. I just kind of slowly fell down into the spiral.
So at that point,
originally, like the intentions were really good, really, you know, just someone trying to help
sure.
in the way that they knew how.
So at that point, did you consider yourself still suicidal or depressed? Or were you kind of going on a different path, high road, forget about the girlfriend, move on with your life kind of thing?
Well, so the suicidality kind of shifted. It wasn't so overt. It wasn't so like, I'm going to kill myself, you know, here's a plan or whatever.
Sure.
But it was, it showed up in other ways. It showed up in risky behaviors. It showed up in taking hard drugs. It showed up in not taking care of myself. So it became less, you know, I'm going to die, and more, if I die, I'm not too worried about it.
Gotcha. You know? Okay.
Much more of a passive suicidality.
Sure. Okay. That's fair.
So now, and that's the deeper issue. Like some of that self-hatred, some of that self-loathing was still there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you know, to bring it back to what I was talking about earlier, that procrastination habit, that's some of the remnants of that,
sure.
actually. Like, now it shows up as self-sabotage, or it did show up as self-sabotage. Of there's still kind of an insecurity, there's still kind of a loathing. It's nowhere near what it was in the beginning.
Okay.
But I just have to be careful, because those thoughts and feelings will creep up for me every once in a while.
All right. Well, I imagine just about everyone's going to have a little bit of head trash on some level, right?
Emotional baggage, you know?
Yeah. No, but I don't know of anyone that does not have any head trash, though. I guess I wouldn't know how to measure that. Do you have any head trash? Check yes or no. So what is your favorite part about owning your own business here?
The freedom, I think, is probably the number one.
Sure.
The freedom, the ability to create. You know, I think I haven't found anything more rewarding than having kind of a crazy idea. Like, some stuff I do is, like, a little bit crazy. It's not insane, but it's just like a little out there.
Okay.
And to have an idea and be like, can I pull this off? You know, like is can I pull off this marketing? Can I pull off this talk? You know,
right? Sure.
Can I pull off this intervention? And then to do it. And to not only pull it off, but to be rewarded in terms of, you know, financial gain or, you know, status in the community or, you know, connections with other people and be like, oh my God, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and bringing these visions to life in the real world.
Sure.
It's very rewarding for me.
Nice. And
to kind of being the writer of my own story.
Sure.
Rewarding.
That's fair. I like that. So on the flip side of that, what is the worst thing about owning your own business from your perspective?
The freedom.
You can do whatever you want, right? No one's holding you accountable. But if you do nothing, that is exactly what you will get in return.
Yeah. It's the same. I mean, it's the same, you know, other side of the same point where, yeah, it's the openness. You know, my past couple of years, I was pretty workaholic.
Okay.
This year for me has been about not being a workaholic and focusing more on my health and focusing on my relationships and focusing on spirituality, which is things that I, you know, put in the chopping block when I was,
sure.
you know, getting the businesses up and running.
Sure.
And, you know, I'm the kind of person, and I'm happy on this kind of person, but I'm the kind of person that will overwork, but will, or not even overwork, but kind of keep myself busy even though I'm not very productive.
Sure.
I had to come to realizing that and learning how to slow down, learning how to not be so anxious, learning how to not be so aggressive, maybe the wrong word, but just kind of have like a fight in me all the time.
Sure.
You know, kind of get the chip off my shoulder kind of thing.
Right.
And that's kind of been this year for me has been trying to slow down and kind of tell myself that I'm okay. That I'm okay. I'm going to survive. I have an income. You know, my businesses are going to survive. You know, everything is okay.
Right.
Because I can sometimes get very anxious worrying about all that.
Oh, interesting.
Be taken away
sure.
at any moment. Or, you know, the leads could dry up or whatever. You know,
sure.
That kind of stuff.
No, that's fair. That's, I imagine, just about every business owner. You're actually probably labeling the stages of entrepreneurship, right? First, you just hit it so freaking hard that everything else is sacrificed. And then once you get it going and you have a little bit of money in the bank, you can say like, wait, what about my family, my health, free time, maybe taking a vacation every once in a while, whatever happened to that?
Exactly.
So it's interesting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're nailing those stages. That's all right. What have been some of the challenges that you've had? I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm saying, I'm just agreeing. Like, that's where I'm at now.
Oh, it's sure. Like, awesome. Yeah, vacations.
Take inventory.
What have been some of the challenges that you, as you progress and as you've grown, like beyond just the startup stuff, stuff that as your business has matured a little bit, hitting over the 5-year hurdle, some of the challenges that you've had to deal with that you didn't see coming?
Yeah, I think the biggest one that I didn't see coming is envy.
Envy?
Is envy, yeah.
Okay, tell me about that.
So envy of some of my colleagues or some of the people that I went to school with or people that are still working in the agency world, you know,
sure.
They're still employed, essentially. You know, there's this, like, hater is probably too strong of a word, but, you know, in the mental health industry, I'm sure it's common across some other industries, but Bloomington's a small town, and many of the people in mental health know each other.
Okay.
And we have networking events. There's, like, parties. There's galas. There's fundraisers. It's a whole, like, political thing.
Sure.
You know? And, you know, being a solo practitioner and being, you know, fairly successful, I have a reputation, and I'm well-known, and that's part of being in the business. You want to have referrals, so you want people to know you,
right,
to associate you with good treatment,
sure,
and being more of a public figure.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, well, I guess in the very beginning, that was intimidating to me because I, you know, was more of an introvert. But then I got over that, and now I like performing and I like being more in the community. But as I succeeded more, I attracted more envy of other people, and that was tough. That was tough. I didn't see that coming at all. Because I had this idea that everyone was on the same team.
Sure.
And that we all wanted, you know, people, like, you know, clients to get better. But, you know, I get a lot of that. I mean, I get a lot of people that are saying, like, not a lot, but a vocal minority, you know, saying that, like I skipped the line or that I sold out because I work with businesses. Or, like I was saying before, with kind of political situation right now, saying that, like, I'm working for the man. Or, like, I'm helping, like, the capitalist empire. You know, like, Boulder is a hyper-progressive town. So people that work with business are kind of given the short end of the stick.
Hold on a second. You're telling me that people actually say this stuff to you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
People say, like, you're working for the man, so you're a terrible person kind of thing? Or really?
Yeah. That I'm betraying the cause, right? Or I'm not working for the people that need the most help.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, wow, I mean, that is crazy.
Well, it's the same question you asked me, right? Like you asked me that question during this interview, but they do it with more aggression.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm not to say that you shouldn't do it. I was just curious from problems, and essentially you answered it pretty eloquently, right? On the individual, though it's a larger problem, it's one person. And on the business, maybe overall it's a smaller problem, but it could be for dozens, if not hundreds of people. So from a multiplier point of view, maybe it is a bigger problem. So, which is something that I didn't realize, but to say, like, from my point of view, I mean, I do business coaching and I have never had any addiction stuff. So I don't have that perspective, right? I had businesses where I've worked with companies that dealt with people that had addictions. And I thought, how do you do that? How do you do that? So I'm like, I'm just going to hang out with the businesses where they got problems that I can solve. You know what I mean? So to say that you shouldn't work with businesses because they're the man or whatever, that seems crazy to me. But I guess in the end, it's all perspective, right?
It's crazy. I mean, again, I don't want to keep politics off too much, but I guess to say, like, you know, Boulder in general is a hyper-progressive town, and the therapy industry is hyper-progressive in that. So it's kind of a niche within a niche.
Gotcha.
So, you know, and this is mainly coming from younger clinicians, right? People that have, you know, started their own business or people that have been in the field for a while.
Sure.
They definitely get it because they're a little bit more seasoned.
Okay.
But for people that are still very idealistic or still very connected to some of their missions, which I respect that. It's just not my mission.
Right.
they can see it as selling out, right? Or, you know, being capitalist or, you know, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
Like I said, that was surprising for me too.
Yeah,
like,
interesting. Right.
I mean,
that is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, I got your back, so it's all good.
All right.
It's all good.
Happy to hear that. Happy to hear that.
So, Mark, we are running out of time here. This is so awesome, and I feel like I got 50 more questions for you, but we'll have to save that for another time if you're okay with that.
Yeah, for sure. It was really fun.
So I appreciate you being on the show. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. If you're listening to this on the web, please like, subscribe, and share. My name is James Kateman, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com. As well as Draw-In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Mark Azulay, the psychotherapist, organizational developer, entrepreneur, and goddamn hype machine. Thank you so much for being on the show, Mark.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And really quick, Mark, how can people find you? It's online, telephone. You tell us where they should reach you.
Yeah, the best way is the website, which is mark-azulay, mark-azoulay.com.
Awesome.
That's the hub for everything.
Very cool. Awesome. I appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Cool, cool. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.